Suck it up! Be a man! Run some dirt in it! I want to try something where I'm gonna act like a girl and you're gonna talk to me, okay?
Ew, do I have to?
Yes! You just take her and then kiss her and then kiss the crap out of her!
Okay.
Excuse me? I'm not a girl!
This isn't how I wanted it to happen and I didn't want to hurt you, but I just wanted to prove that I was good enough.
Welcome to The Contenders, the show about the movies made by and starring women who refuse to play by the rules. I'm Aislinn Addington.
And I'm Tobin Addington. And we have a special guest with us today to talk about this amazing movie. She'll have to correct me if I get this wrong. I'm going to try and run through. She does so much that I have to try and get all the credits here. She's a director for Crash Course. She hosts Crash Course Sociology. She's the co-founder of Snark Squad and a co-host of the Snark Squad podcast, which is fantastic. We have Nicole Sweeney with us. Hi, Nicole.
Hello. Thank you very much. That made me sound very impressive. So thank you. I feel very good about myself now.
Well, it's true. I'm thrilled to have you on here. I think this is going to be a fascinating conversation. I realize I already have swapped the order of what I had on our schedule here because I was supposed to introduce the movie first. So I apologize. Look at me stepping all over your lines there again.
You do have that trouble. I think it's a combo of you being a director, an educator, and my older brother.
Yeah, older brother is key, I think, there.
But I've been fighting back for some years, so we'll find that balance. Today, I am honored and privileged to introduce the 2006 classic, She's the Man. We'll talk about women specifically in a minute, but I will say starring Amanda Bynes and a not yet famous Channing Tatum. Mm-hmm. Because Step Up did not come out until like 6 months later.
That has me wondering if this was, these were like, were they shot concurrently or were they, like, I wonder where he said yes to this movie in terms of his career.
I recently read an excerpt from an interview with Channing Tatum's wife, Jenna Dewan Tatum, and she says they met in 2005 on the set of Step Up. So I don't know which was filmed when. I also know because of some of the behind the scenes things that while it takes place the end of summer, it was off season in Vancouver. It was very cold. So I don't know if we can, those aren't enough pieces to piece together the puzzle. And I'm sure someone out there just knows the stupid answer, but that's the insight I can share because of
some sleuthing.
12 years of absorbing this film. Which I first saw with you, Tobin. I don't know if you recall. It was one of our swapsy days where
you have to explain what that means.
Well, I just made it up. And it's how I describe a day or weekend in which I went to something with you that you were very excited about and you went to something with me that I was very excited about. And it doesn't mean that we didn't want to see the opposite. It's just our priority list. So I don't know if you can remember what we saw on your list.
No, I don't remember.
It was spring break and I was in New York visiting you. And we went to She's the Man and something else, but I don't remember what the other was. But I do remember liking it a bit despite myself at the time. And then I have since embraced it fully. Nicole, what is your, do you have a history with this film?
So this movie came out in 2006. I graduated from high school in 2006, so I was very much in like this. I loved Amanda Bynes growing up, like all that, and her show. And so, yes, I don't vividly recall like going to see it in the theater, but 100%, I am confident that I saw it in the theater. I also, my freshman year of college, was on an event planning board thing at school, and I was on the films board and the like second film that we screened after I like got on the films board was this movie. And I don't remember if I picked it or not, but like probably I did. And so I have a poster for it as well. Like as part of, you know, cause when you get the movie, they send you the movie. posters to put up. So my bedroom wall at my parents' house, which is still intact, you know, yeah. shrine to my teenage self, has a giant She's the Man poster on the wall. So I have, I also have an established relationship.
Oh, amazing. Amazing. I do remember seeing it, but, and I remember, Aislinn, I remember you and I had like, we have a history with Amanda Bynes a little bit too, don't we? I mean, not in person, but like through the movies. Do I have that wrong?
We were not, Nicole, we, whether it's fortunate or unfortunately, did not have Nickelodeon growing up. It was a treat to go to a hotel and have Nickelodeon, in part because of where we lived. I think it was difficult to get at the time. I mean, now it's standard, but it wasn't. I knew because I'm younger, we eventually did get it. And so I knew some of the, all that, and whatever that game show was that she was on a lot, but I don't have a strong Nickelodeon bond with her. So I don't know, Tobin, what you're thinking of.
Yeah. I think maybe
I mean, she was in EVA, but
the 2003 classic, What a Girl Wants, another Amanda Bynes favorite of mine.
Oh my gosh. You mean the why am I attracted to Colin Firth when I'm supposed to be attracted to the boy? That's what I call that movie.
I do remember that.
I didn't know I had a daddy complex until I don't. Let's stop. Hi, mom and dad.
But you do love Colin Firth because of that movie.
Yes, that is where, for whatever reason, it was that one that I went, know, in that way.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I gotcha. I think we all get what you're laying down. Yeah.
But I feel like for other people, it was Bridget Jones or
Pride and Prejudice. Right.
And for me, it was What a Girl Wants. But you're right, Nicole. I think that is also, this is her prime. This is her being her. And I wrote that several times, like, it is broad, but that is her. And it also knows, I feel like it knows what it is.
I get really bad nosebleeds.
So you stick them up your nose?
Yeah. What? You've never done that? Oh my, Beckham does it all the time.
Seriously?
Yes. Look, I'll just show you how to do it. Take that off and whatever that is. And stick it right in. It absorbs right up.
Well, and her shtick on the Amanda Show was always being very excessive, like that. Like that was always very much her thing. Was just like she's funny because she's over the top, and you know, children being children, that's hilarious. And this is very much that. I think there are certain things about her in this movie that I would probably find grating if they were anybody else, but because it's Amanda Bynes being just absurd, it's charming to me.
I agree.
Yeah.
Tobin, do you have a two bits for this
one? You know, I sort of don't, because you can't find much about this movie.
Well, I mean, I feel like we have given you many of bits about this film already.
No, true. But in terms of the development of the movie, I don't have a lot to say. I have more to say about some of the women behind the film. So I think we should...
So let's get to that.
I think we should do that. And before that, I just wanted to ask you, Aislinn, are we part of a podcast network?
That is a great question. We are. And I've actually been, thank you for reminding me, because I have been talking to folks about this all day as word has spread far and wide to both my Facebook pages and my Twitter that we have this show. And people say, well, what do you mean? How do you do it? I said, well, we've been embraced by the Cage Club Network.
So Aislinn, tell us who's behind this movie.
So women involved in major roles include, of course, lead actor Amanda Bynes, writers Karen McCullough and Kristen Smith, and producer Lauren Shuler Donner, which Tobin, I feel like, oh, pardon me, I stepped on that. Do you want me to do it again?
No, that's all right. We'll roll with it.
Okay. Tobin, I see it in my notes that Tobin has some thoughts.
I do.
Tobin, take the floor, please, briefly.
So briefly, in lieu of two bits, in lieu of the history of the movie, I just want to talk about Lauren Shuler Donner here. So Lauren Shuler Donner is a producer who has worked in sort of is well known in sort of Hollywood circles, mostly because of the X-Men franchise. Like this is a woman who has been a high power producer forever. She's married to Richard Donner, who made things like Goonies and Lethal Weapon and a bunch of big movies, particularly in the 70s, the first two Superman movies. But she, I think, has only produced one or two movies with him and has been a big time mover and shaker in Hollywood for the last like 30 years on her own. And I don't think, you know, she gets, like, she's not someone that a lot of people would know, but she is, I think, an example of someone, you know, we talk about having women in the room who help decide what gets made and how that sort of changes things. And I think that she's someone who has, you know, credits all the way back to like St. Elmo's Fire and, you know, and all the way up to you know, the Oscar nominated Logan, you know? So this is a woman who has sort of charted her own path in Hollywood. And I think would, if we extended this to sort of talk about producers, I think that she would definitely be the kind of person that we would, you know, want to talk about on the show. So I just want to say she doesn't get enough sort of public credit. And I want to sort of, she deserves a shout out from us here, especially as a woman who has sort of navigated the Hollywood system as a producer through many, many years and done a lot of great work.
That's awesome. Shout out. Indeed. We need a shout out button, the way you have the tinkle, tinkle. Yeah. When you said Tobin has thoughts here, I thought they would be like grave thoughts.
Oh, no.
I'm glad that they're celebratory thoughts. So thank you. So I would love, I really want to get talking about this. Yep. So Tobin, would you give us the brief plot rundown in case some folks find it hard to get a hold of?
Surely everyone has seen this movie, but in case you haven't, in this loose adaptation of Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, Amanda Bynes plays Viola, a tough and assertive star soccer player. When her high school team gets cut, she disguises herself as her twin brother Sebastian so she can attend nearby Illyria and play on the boys' team. Romantic entanglements ensue as Viola dodges Sebastian's ex-girlfriend and falls for Sebastian's roommate, who only has eyes for another young woman named Olivia, who's now head over heels for Viola's Sebastian, obviously. The whole thing culminates in a big soccer game between Viola's old school and Illyria, where all the secrets are revealed and everyone is forced to come clean.
Yeah.
So that's the encapsulation of this movie.
The big poster actually also breaks. It's like on the poster printed as like Viola likes whatever. The chain of X likes Y, who likes Z. Spelled out for you.
Oh, cool. Well, that's what a great way to do that.
While I'm a big fan, can I upfront say something that struck me now watching it that I was...
Yes.
So I just need to give a big ugh to this from a privilege-oriented lens, right? These are all very rich white people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, which in movies. I just wanted to say it up front as I will continue to praise other aspects of it, that I recognize some of that is intentional in order to set up the rivalry that's replacing warring geographical areas, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, who lives in a dorm in high school? Whose parents, don't know where they are and can go to London on the fly?
Right, right.
You have very strategically placed actors of color who often don't have a lot to do. So I just wanted to,
that needs to be said.
I just wanted to say, I wrote a big, privilege is rough in this one.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not the first nor the last that we'll say that about. And that's perhaps a different podcast, but intersectionality, it is part of what we're talking about. Mm-hmm,
for sure.
So much of the plot hinges on that wealth too, and on that wealth being unexamined.
The taken for granted status that they all have. Like, oh, the junior, is it junior club? What's it called?
Ladies, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
Junior league.
Junior, like, thank you, that in some areas is what you do. Obviously the debutante business, which is still part of some cultures, but is not ubiquitous, is not everyone's story. Not that you have to tell everyone's story, but again, I could talk myself into circles.
I'm curious, Nicole, since you had this post, since you continue in one of your, in your life to have this poster somewhere, what was your experience like seeing it? Like, how long had it been since you've seen it? What was the experience sort of revisiting it with fresh eyes?
It's probably been a decade since I've seen this movie. Like, there's that cluster right around the time that it came out that I'm sure I saw it plenty of times, but have not really seen it since then. And my feelings were conflicted. There are lots of things about this movie that I still love. I really just enjoy like rom-coms and like teenager stories in general. Both of those things are things that I like consuming. So it hits both of those spots. But the other, in addition to the aggressive privilege, the other thing that the plot very aggressively hinges on repeatedly is just very cis-normative and heteronormative stuff that was just very, like, Olivia is fucking bisexual. She's bisexual. Olivia is clearly bisexual. She should not be riding off into the sunset with Sebastian at the end of the movie. And like, that is upsetting to me. And also the fact that like gender affirmation happens by way of people revealing, like getting naked, like that is, So there's some stuff like that that's just very rough to digest in 2018. But I also have all of this nostalgia and there are just other things about it that I find so charming. So it's a mixed bag of emotions watching it now.
I'm kind of glad to hear you say that because I had a similar reaction. I have not seen it since we saw it in the theater, I think. And I think and I think that maybe my memory of an Amanda Bynes thing is if we went to this with a sort of double feature of something that I wanted to see in film school, it was probably something really pretentious. And I mean, I don't know what I took you to, but time and time again, the sort of less pretentious movie was better than the other. And I'm sure what it was is I came away saying, like, she's a – Amanda Bynes is a clown, but I don't mean that pejoratively. I mean, she, is performing in a kind of a different way and is kind of amazing at what she's able to do and to sort of make – I mean, she, as you say, Nicole, she's hammy. She's big. Like, that's – but that's part of the – you know, it's like built into the story, you know? It's like part of it works in this way. It's like it felt to me watching it this time like there was a subversive movie inside this movie that would poke through sometimes and then kind of disappear, right? That would sort of be subsumed by something much more normalizing. And that was my impression. But I've only seen the movie, I think, probably twice now, then and now. And when I watched it, my first note was like, this feels like the 90s. Like, I would have guessed this was like 97, 98. And to find out that it was only 2006, like, that seems not that long ago.
The fact that the soundtrack is all the same pop punk jams that we included in my senior video, very, very clearly situated it. I couldn't remember exactly when it came out, but I was listening, like, every new song that came out, I was like, oh, this is definitely, like, give or take a year, 2006. Yeah,
okay. I started singing along with every single one. I had the song in the opening credits is the Veronicas. And I accidentally saw them in Kansas City because I was there for a different 90s band. And they were opening and that song came on. And it was that world colliding moment of, I know this song. I know this song so well. I'm singing along at this concert. What's it from? And then chorus hit and I was like, she's amazing. It was amazing. Tobin, I like your assessment that there's a more subversive movie inside, or that, because I felt like while, yes, problematic and troubling and many, many of the sex and gender related elements, there were these messages and ideas poking through that if you go from the, well, a couple of ways. One, the sort of, if you, you know, see it all as satirical and if you're in on the joke, you understand. But then for people that are just watching the movie, you know, what are the messages you're getting on the various levels? But I forgot the other thing I was going to say. It was better than the first thing.
That was just the wind up.
It really was. Yeah, it was the thing I thought of while I was trying to say the other thing. Poking from inside. give me one more second. Oh, yes. If you go from the perspective of meeting people where they are. Uh-huh. And then sort of planting seeds for something more. Mm-hmm. Right. So on the one level, it's this is how you be a boy. This is how you be a girl. But really they're, you know, demonstrating how performative all that is.
Right. Right.
And ideally, you know, they're turning that masculinity into masculinities.
Right.
Through, you know, and expanding that accordion out. I don't think that gets, it does get done for femininity in that in the end, Amanda is more accepted for the kind of woman that she's portraying, but still within a very privileged white white box. So I like that assessment because there are things that, you know, throughout she makes comments about women's equality.
Yeah. Yes.
Like throughout it. Right. And, but that's not generally what everyone else is talking about. Sort of, is that enough? And we'll see when we get to the progressive, regressive. But, you know, someone says toward the beginning, stop that, you're being a girl.
Right.
Which is what people said
right
at that time. One of my proudest accomplishments in my life is getting one of my friends from elementary school to stop saying, you're being a pussy. The way I did that was to really get into it with her about what all pussies can get done. And again, it's very binary, but that's where I had to meet that person.
Right.
The next lesson was non-binary. And so now when someone is being hesitant or perhaps being weak or any pejorative sort of thing, she'll say, stop being a penis. And I feel like that's step one, right? Hopefully we'll get to step two, but that's
a place to start.
Thank you. A place to start. And that's sort of where I defend some of the tropes in this film.
I do love that this movie's not a mystical body swap movie. I like that the sort of makeover that the main character gets, which is, you know, a hallmark of this sort of genre, it happens early, and it's her sort of this different kind of transformation, and that she has to inhabit this other character as opposed to it being sort of magically, you know, put upon her, you know. I think that's that felt refreshing, even though what that's actually doing is just taking us back to the source material, right? Like it's just taking us back to right. Twelfth Night, which is probably where the subversive stuff comes from in the first place.
Sometimes I forget in this, it's source material. In a similar way to 10 Things I Hate About You. I love Shakespeare in high school. And so I do remember it, but there are moments where I'm like, well, why do they do that? Oh, okay. That's how they need to get to that place. And this is how they're navigating it. You said 90s, and that reminded me something that also stuck out for me is, whoa, we would not, hopefully not doing this today. Do we still play Shirts and Skins?
That's a good question.
That seems like probably that still happens.
That's what those little jerseys are, or little leg belts are for. I remember when you were a child, yes. Tobin. Lofty athletic career. I remember you playing Shirts and Skins and asking about it, but that just, I don't know if that anyone else bumped on that, but that stuck out to me as so inappropriate.
Oh yeah. Highly fucking inappropriate. But I went to high school in a small town in Missouri, and I think inappropriate doesn't necessarily is not mutually exclusive to like things that happen. So
oh, absolutely. I just didn't know.
How much does she look like Justin Bieber when she first appears?
Thank you.
And
was that,
and I don't have my Bieber timeline in front of me, so I don't know when he became a thing. But like, is that intentional or is that an accident?
He's definitely later than that. I was out of college before Bieber became like phenomenon.
Maybe Bieber was inspired by Vine. Perhaps this is the origin of the Beeb. So perhaps her performance of masculinity is what he bases his on. I do appreciate, I don't know, I just wrote down a note about the way that she gets help for her performance from other men, whether they know it or not.
How do you mean?
Right. So that rule that there's a literal scene where she follows men around on the street. But then when, you know, she has the roommate and his friends and various, I just feel like she's constantly collecting data. And then, and she gets it, you know, wrong. I'm putting that in quotes. But so for instance, the lunchroom scene table, when she first tries to play along and tries to appropriately objectify the woman they're objectifying. And then when it, you know, turns out that Channing Tatum has a little more humanity going on, then, you know, she switches back and she's sympathetic. And yeah, I feel like she's trying to find her levels. Okay, what does this mean and how do I fit? And then ultimately needs help from her female friends and the flamboyantly gay character that all late 90s, early 2000s high school movies have.
Yes.
But yeah, she had help crafting her performance.
Yeah.
Nicole, were you trying to jump in there? I couldn't tell.
Oh, no. I will say, though, since you brought up the friends, I do wish that there were more of her friends. Yes. That's a thing. That's an adjustment I would make to this movie, because just watching them like come to help her, the whole scene is just over the top and absurd and it's just delightful. I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. She had friends, because she has a whole life that she's just checking out on for two weeks, apparently. But she had friends in that other life. So, and they seem great and neat, and also were really good at soccer too. So what are they doing exactly right now?
So what are they?
I don't know.
I wondered if I'm taking it further into reality than it ought to be, but that the point of her, you know, being able to be on the winning team would then integrate.
Yeah, that seems
the league in a larger way.
Yes,
and so her friends were hinging their hopes on her. But I agree 100%. I love the friendship between the female soccer players, and I think it could have added. And maybe there's a deleted scene out there I have not yet found with a sleepover. Oh, I can relax because I'm not playing that role. Or in the number of phone calls that may or may not trip her up along the way with that cell phone that I also had, the little flip phone. I think the friends could have been integrated in that as well. So I feel like men help her with her performance, but those female friends help her too. I mean, it's also, you're so heteronormative and yucky, but delightful. I mean, it's that I'm cringing, but I'm smiling so hard while I'm cringing.
Yeah.
But again, is it because this, do we then say, well, that is the source material is based on these triangles and these pairings and these partnerships. And so we're being true to that.
So I don't really know the source material very well at all. I don't know it. So I'm like going to defer to both of you on this. But a friend of mine, I was talking to a friend of mine about this a little bit before coming to record this, in part because I was like, I don't even know how to unpack all of my feelings that I have, my conflicted feelings about it. But something that she said, she brought up this sort of question of it versus the source material. And she was saying that, like, for her, the play brought up kind of more interesting questions about sort of attraction and heteronormativity, and that essentially it's a, like, Hollywood is at fault for reducing that. So I don't know, but I find, so I just, your comment struck me because it seems sort of to be the opposite of what she's saying, but I don't know what I'm talking about. So I'm tossing that idea out there if either of you guys have thoughts on that.
I tend to agree with that. I know the play pretty well. And I also love a good Shakespeare in High School movie. Like, that's in my wheelhouse. Like, I haven't watched O in a long time, the Othello in high schools, but I'm there. I'll watch whatever comes my way. But I think that's my read of that is exactly the same, that there's so much more ambiguity and complexity in the relationships, both sort of sexual and romantic and platonic and all kinds of ways in the Shakespeare version. And I think that what that allows people to do who are doing an adaptation of Twelfth Night is then they can play with that in all kinds of ways. Mm-hmm. Whereas this movie does in the end have to be a little harder or doesn't have to. This movie chooses to reinforce whether it's heteronormativity or whatever it is, by the end of the movie in a way that feels like it's, bowing to pressure from, or internalized pressure, Hollywood pressure. I would agree. I would blame Hollywood for that more than, I think there's much more interesting takes on all that in a production of Twelfth Night than you would get in this movie. And I did have in my notes here as she begins to perform as Viola starts being Sebastian, that I had a note here that her nightmare of masculinity is my nightmare of masculinity. and I think that there's something about, and partway through the movie, doesn't Channing Tatum like tell her to like cool it a couple times? Like,
yes.
I think that that is, I'm giving the movie credit that it knows and that she knows that what she's doing is performing performative masculinity for the audience in a way for us to look at it and say, oh yeah, people do act like that. And that's terrible. And maybe for some people who feel like they have to act like that to realize that it's not, like, it's not a good look, but as she was doing it, as she was moving into the, especially early on when she's maybe like first in the room and is trying to, act like what she thinks a dude in this room is going to act like. Mm-hmm. That is my nightmare of what a man is, quote unquote, supposed to act like.
Hey.
Hey. What up?
You must be my roommates.
What's your name?
Sebastian Hastings.
Duke Orsino. Okay. This is Andrew and Toby. They live next door.
Yeah, freshman dorms that away, Twiglet.
Seriously, how old are you?
I skipped a couple grades. I'm brilliant. Shh. Anyway, do you know when soccer tryouts start?
Noon. You play?
Absolutely. Center forward. You know, bruh.
I think you're right that they reduced down some of that room to play and fluidity into more archetypal and this is the box you have to play in. And I do think that they shrank those targets.
Right.
For this piece, for sure.
It is interesting that what you have, and this is a thing I didn't remember from the first one, because I didn't remember any of the junior league stuff, any of the sort of cotillion stuff, is that it is sort of, she is not comfortable in either, right? Like they're presenting two extremes, one, an extreme of sort of performative masculinity and femininity. And she doesn't feel comfortable in either. And I think that's kind of an interesting thing.
I hadn't thought about it in that way. I was thinking last night about how she doesn't fit, again, physically with, you know, they say at the beginning, are you from the freshman dorm? You know, she doesn't fit the mold, if you will, of that floor in the dorm, mm-hmm. but neither does Sebastian. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so in a way, both Sebastians are stretching what that masculinity can look like. And that is part of what attracts Olivia to both the Sebastians. Is there a difference from that standard, you know, hegemonic, this is what mm-hmm. men are sort of deal?
Can I ask a quick question of you both? Is this how true to your experience is this depiction of performative masculinity?
Mm. I mean, it is at once an extreme and a very thin slice. I can't speak to athletics intimately in that way, but I have seen it and continue to see it constantly. And I empathize, but, you know, it's one of a number of systemic issues to deal with. Is that your, or did I not answer your question?
Yeah. Like, is this a style of performed masculinity that you sort of, is this in high school what you would have thought men or boys were supposed to act like? Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I see. No, but I was the queen of the band nerd, so I was playing with a different group of men, boys at that point. I took it more as I have a student right now who in my office is, you know, one thing, and the sort of the minute his brothers from his fraternity come in, mm-hmm. there's a completely different mm-hmm. set of mannerisms. And I don't know that he knows that he does that. And he doesn't betray necessarily that I've seen, at least not in front of me. He doesn't betray the, you know, sort of values that we have helped perpetuate in him. But in the way that when Viola turns to Sebastian, there's a physicality that is different and there's a vernacular that's different. I mm-hmm. continue to see that.
Yeah, I would say it's hard for me to actually place myself back into my high school self in that way, but I feel like probably yes, like most of this rings to, like, if my 17-year-old self were to be, you know, okay, I'm going to pretend to be a boy mm-hmm. for 2 weeks. I feel like, yeah, like that rings, it feels fairly true to me. I had brothers too on either side of me in the age order of my siblings, but I still feel like, yes, that performance of masculinity was very much my understanding of the world then.
I think that's fascinating. I think it would be mine if I were back in high school, we're told to act like a dude on the soccer team. I think I would adopt a lot of these mannerisms too. Mm-hmm. Like I think this is the mm-hmm. not to the extreme that she does, you know, but the strut and the, you know, like the wipe the nose, you know, like all the sort of her physicality. I think she does nail something in a certain kind of performed masculinity in a way that felt like, you know, like I say, if I had been asked at 17 to act like one of these other kinds of guys, it would be the persona I would put on, mm-hmm. I think a real credit to this movie. Mm-hmm. It's one of these things that I think the movie, as funny as that's supposed to be, it's also meant mm-hmm. to be a little horrific. And I think that it does that really well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little bit of a funhouse mirror, but that's
right. Right. You. Exactly. Right.
Yes. Yes.
I just have to point out misogyny, harassment, and terrible hygiene situations in having a kissing booth.
Yes. A kissing booth.
Oh my God.
Whose parents signed them right. up for an actual kissing
right.
booth?
Yeah, your debutante daughters, you're going to have your precious debutante daughters kiss strangers for an hour? No fucking way. No.
For money.
And that, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's for charity. But that no. middle schooler who's like, you're paying for it. You don't have to. I was like, oh, that one hurts. And in that case, I do think he was meant to be funny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just not okay. Like that's one where I'm like, nope.
I'm not amazed.
That goes in the other pile. Like if we have marbles to go in one pile or another. That one goes in the bad pile.
That's one where I had the note was, does this happen anymore? This is when it's hard for me to imagine that this would happen.
Yeah, that one, I don't think right. so. I would be very surprised.
I'm sure in college it does, but I don't think high school age.
Yeah, yeah, maybe in college where, and it's like everybody who is also in attendance is also in college. I could maybe see that happening, but this right. kind of situation with these like high school girls and like children to old men,
And I'm not advocating it as a
yeah, the plausibility of it.
I'm
yes.
confident
yes.
Right.
Yes. Right. Yes.
There right. you go.
Well, that makes me feel better that it's not happening. Well, we hope no. that we don't think it's happening anymore.
I don't want to know.
yeah, exactly.
Like that. Don't fucking tell me.
Another part that really made me mad. So I, as we discussed, I loved Amanda Bynes' Friends.
Yes.
The friend of Olivia, who I'm assuming in the play is a lady in waiting because that's mm-hmm. all she does, who encourages her, like her advice about being a normal girl mm-hmm. is to find the guy who likes friend and make him jealous. Mm-hmm. But that's what women do. And that to me also felt harsh when I watched it this time.
I would say it felt harsh, but it didn't strike me. It also didn't strike me as like, I kind of in the same way as all of it, you know, funhousey, like, yeah, yeah. I mean, harsh, but not necessarily inaccurate in terms of mm-hmm. performed ideas about how you engage in these spaces. I keep thinking, kind of circling back to everything that you said earlier about how she learned to perform masculinity, which was just mm-hmm. deeply interesting. And I think probably the most interesting thing about this movie actually is this constant like learning, is that it is all a sequence of basically other people telling each other and teaching each other, these teenagers teaching each other how to perform masculinity and femininity and relationships and whatever, them teaching each other how to perform all of these sex and gender roles. And I don't have strong one way or the other opinions on that as far as like, you know, plausibility or how true it rang. But I definitely think it is very interesting in that larger theme of these teenagers teaching each other these roles.
Yeah, there's so I guess it's not quite self-policing, but they're reinforcing each other in this way, right?
Right. Yeah. In the same way that, you know, Viola Sebastian has to find that middle ground between knowing that it's all broad, but the hyper masculine and the more feminine truder, probably her character, mm-hmm. you know, she has to find that in the middle. But yeah, I mean, the gender role expectations are, you know, what it, not where the funny comes from, but where the funny is expected to come from.
Mm-hmm. Right, right, right. right. Mm-hmm.
And so another point of that was the spider has gotten out.
Mm-hmm. You're the dude.
And they see the spider. Yeah, you're the dude. but that, yeah, in And so a couple of things. One is that earlier I wrote down the there are a few moments between the men and the Viola Sebastian of distance, right? Why are you so close to me? Why are you touching me?
Mm-hmm.
That the man distance.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the spider situation, that's, you know, immediately
mm-hmm.
not mm-hmm. there anymore. That's, I think for me, I want to give him and the character a lot of credit. Like, in when it comes down to it, we are all people. I'm giving it credit, but I had a moment of that. But then still within that, then there's gendered expectations for how they both act.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We, the audience, knowing that one is not a man, but is it? I don't know.
Was it right? Isn't it right before that, that they're having their most sort of intimate conversation? Am I remembering that right? That they're having their,
No, this happens before the kissing booth.
Yeah. I don't mean the, I see.
Yeah.
After the kissing booth, uh-huh. they're lying on the beds and talking about, because she comes back and she's sort of smitten, but then having to remember to be Sebastian, right? She sort of dances through the room.
Right.
That's after the spider.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Spider happens
before that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I do appreciate some of the turns they make with the Channing Tatum character to set him up sort of visually as the paragon of, you know, of masculinity, you know, this like exaggerated high school, you know, person, mm-hmm. right? Like nobody moves like Channing Tatum in real mm-hmm. life, you know, nobody looks like that in real life. And then to have him, you know, be not, as he says, I'm not, what does he say? I'm not good with girls. I don't know how to talk to girls. Mm-hmm. I'm not, like, he's not good mm-hmm. with women. He's not confident. Which is, I think, I don't want to pat the movie on the back too much, but like, I'm glad they did that, right? I'm glad they have this other side mm-hmm. of something that could have just been set up as kind of, you know, eye candy paragon of masculinity thing. And at least right. make him, he gets to show some vulnerability, which is, I think this yeah. movie's at its best when everybody begins to recognize that they are playing roles and that yes. they don't have to. And I think that there are times that when everybody gets that shot, and I really appreciate it, that the movie takes the care to do that for so many of these characters.
Why do I get the feeling you don't do this very often?
Man, I'm not really good at talking to girls.
Why? You're hot.
What?
You know, you're an appealing guy, man.
It could be argued that his sensitivity, if you will, is limited to Olivia.
Right.
Like, we don't know. Does he feel that? Well, we don't know. Does he feel that way about all women? Or is it Olivia specific that he's, more human toward because of his affection, but he, you know, he'll pull Sebastian back, but then doesn't want to be called sensitive. He knows the rules.
Right.
Set up, and from where within that he can take a stand or not take a stand. And then he does in that final game, right? He thinks she should play, but he's not sure he wants to ever speak to her again.
Right.
And I know we're talking about two different things, but that just sort of, I like what you had to say, Tobin, that he's allowed some room. And I agree that those are sort of the best pieces that when I first watched it, and I knew she played, obviously, because I've watched it so many times, but when I first watched it, I didn't think he was going to agree to let her play. Mm-hmm. Right. I didn't think he was going to say, yeah, no, I think if we're going to mm-hmm. win today, she should play. Before we talk about the end, because I feel like there's more to say about the mm-hmm. game, can I say my favorite line from the whole movie?
Yes, please.
Screw you guys. I hate high school.
Yes. That part was great. Especially because it followed a really great moment of commentary of just like all of the rules that like basis for everything that's happening in this story. Like they're bullshit. They suck. They're not fair. Mm-hmm. They don't make any sense. And yeah, like
just be you.
Well, yeah.
Another character that I grew to become like had a lot of affection for by the end was Eunice.
Right. Who he's talking about when he says that.
Yes.
Line.
Because I feel like she is purely herself. Right. Like I may be wrong, but it feels to me like even when she dresses up to go on the date, like this is how she dresses mm-hmm. up to go on a date. Right. Like she's just mm-hmm. and I know they're playing her as like really broadly and like she's supposed to be scary and we're supposed to like be, you know, like laugh at her sometimes, I think. But mm-hmm. I don't read her that way. I choose not to see her that way. I choose to see her as someone who's sort of like planting a flag for being entirely yourself, which is not an easy thing to do in life, let alone in the middle of high school. And I found myself appreciating her, I'm sure, more now than I did when I first saw the movie.
I wish there were a couple more misfits. To me, she's stood out to be othered.
Yes, totally, totally.
By everyone.
Right.
And she does, although another one of my favorite parts is when Viola Sebastian sort of smacks a pen out of someone's hand and says, be nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they might not have, no one at their biology table may have ever said to them about that. But so I don't know. I get feeling about Eunice just because they are forcing such a
totally
extreme character. But I agree that she is whatever that character is made to be. You know, she is herself and does not change. There's not a Eunice makeover scene.
I guess I'm imagining Eunice not through the lens of the movie. And I like that Eunice. Like, I like the Eunice that the movie's not using as a punchline. That's I like that Eunice.
And I have a hard time seeing beyond that.
Yeah, I don't know I don't think it warrants it. I just.
it makes you happier to imagine.
Yeah, exactly.
I agree. I think in a lot of ways, it doesn't warrant the affection I have for it, but the affection remains.
The heart wants what it wants, you know?
And sometimes it wants a pretty famous Tatum.
Can I say one more thing before we get to the game, which is that I wish, I'm just going to say it because that's me performing, asking the question.
Sure.
One thing that I would do that I think would be an easy fix to change, like there's a lot of stuff in this movie that I think we all agree, it sounds like we would like to sort of massage here and there. Like we wish there were things that were different about it. One very basic one, I think, that I think would have been kind of easy to do. Imagine if, she comes to Illyria, tries out for the boys team and ends up second string, right? Like she's not first string. She's not going to be part of the team. What if she had come in and had been like amazing and had taken Duke's spot? Like what if she had come in and she had knocked him out of the first string? And so instead of him sort of teaching her how to play soccer through the movie, which he does, what if she had been teaching him, right? Like what if there was, their deal was inverted somehow?
You invert their deal basically by having him be the one person who knows, right?
Right,
who
exactly
knows the secret, like because they're roommates. Yeah. And so it's too tricky, you know, to keep the secret from the roommate. And so he knows. And since she bumped off his spot, like she spends, you know, he keeps her secret in exchange for her making him better.
I love that. I love that, Nicole. That's great.
Teamwork.
You just have to have a regular sized high school student.
Well, yes, there are a lot of things.
Right?
Well, he could be clumsy. Like he doesn't have to move like Channing Tatum, you know? Like,
you know, I just, our expectations for his body are too high. And I'm saying that as I am scolding myself in that. Right. I mean, so I saw him in this, hadn't seen it in a long time. And I was like, wow, he was so skinny then. And I don't mean he's fat. No. I just mean he's bulk.
No,
he's shredded in this movie. And now he's so bulked up in it even more.
Yeah.
I had a real moment of empathy and sympathy.
Mm-hmm. Right. We should say that Cage Club Network is doing a Magic Mike's podcast. They're doing Channing Tatum. They're going through all of his movies. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a fascinating thing, I think, because he's a person who, and this happens probably more to women than to men, but he's an actor who I think has been, typecast is not quite the right word, but we have certain expectations of his abilities and his range that he has because of how he looks and quite frankly, how he can move, right? Like the you watch him in Magic Mike
you
and he is.
You keep talking about that. Are you jealous?
Totally. Who would be? This man can move his body in ways that feel inhuman, you know? And I think that that's – so because of that, then he has to continue to prove himself as an actor in a way that some people don't. And I'm not saying poor Channing Tatum because he looks like this and can move like this. But it is an interesting sort of point of analysis, I think, in terms of, you know, how he plays against that and toward that in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. It'll be interesting to hear how it all backs up and where those moments of growth and stretching really are, right?
Yeah.
I don't think we've talked about his character had some room to breathe, but I don't know that Channing did in this or needed to at this point. I think it was in the between this and Step Up. Obviously, Step Up is much more famous, but I think the two together really did catapult him into a different realm of fame and being able to be a working actor. But speaking of bodies,
yes,
go on.
Let's
high school cheerleading uniforms.
Oh my god,
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, no.
Are you kidding me?
I didn't notice this.
You didn't notice?
No, tell me, no.
They were wearing like sports bras, hot pants, and
they were dressed like that, like Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders.
Oh, really?
Not high school cheerleaders.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah,
we're you know, cut like them. It was setting.
That's so
it
funny,
always is.
My note there was like, "Hey, we get a shot of the pep band," which I think says more about me than about the movie. But yeah.
That's amazing. We mentioned there's some genitalia in this scene. Obviously, we don't see it, but that the proof of identity is all about the junk.
Mm-hmm. And the reactions to that are kind of horrifyingly interesting, I think, too. So Sebastian at one point shows his genitalia, and there's mm-hmm. a lot of like, ooh, ah, right? And like the dad, what does the dad say? Something like
that is a boy.
In this kind of gross kind of thing. And then she shows her breasts, right? At some
yes.
point,
yes. she flashes her breasts to prove that it's her.
And then, like, the mom is horrified. Like, there's just a, mm-hmm. it's the movie is not living up to its promise or its principles in that scene.
I think in that case, they thought this would be funny. And in the switcheroo of it, right? Because they're not on the field at the same time mm-hmm. until the very end. So how are we going to show the switch? That reminds me, we have not at all talked about David Cross.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
So somebody has to go first because it's not going to be me. Nobody wants to touch that one.
I don't. I just, so maybe we don't have to talk about it. That's just, okay, how about this? The character of the headmaster
yes.
who is doing different jobs all around campus mm-hmm. and thus can pop up. So from the headmaster's office to serving lunch or not serving lunch as it was, and then to washing windows and then to pruning shrubbery. That, again, in this broad wackadoodle world, I enjoy that way to keep the headmaster around and sort of on Sebastian's side, mm-hmm. really. Mm-hmm. You know, the one phone call, Sebastian's playing with her wig and the principal sees it and comments about male pattern baldness. Mm-hmm. And then in the next one, which is, I think, maybe more often quoted than screw you guys, I hate high school. Viola Sebastian is talking to her mother about why she doesn't want to be in the cotillion, why she doesn't want to wear high heels because, you know, they're designed in part to keep it more difficult for women to run away. Mm-hmm. And the principal or the headmaster, you know, defends that position mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Instead of saying, oh, why is he talking about high heels? He shouldn't be wearing high heels. That, well, have you ever tried to run away in high heels? Like, so there are parts of the performance and of the character that add to the quirky, mm-hmm. heightened atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is what I have to say.
Yeah, he fits in well with the sort of Amanda Bynes over the top performance as well. Like it gels really nicely.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, he ands the world we're living in. In the final scene, like many in this era until now, I hate it when no one hands. I hate it when the female character doesn't immediately grab the hair tie she has around her wrist.
Oh my God.
And
yes.
Pull her damn hair back. It yes. bothers me in Buffy. It bothers me, obviously, in this. I feel like there's an ice skating movie it bothers me in. No one does that.
Yeah. I mean, she wouldn't have necessarily had one around her wrist because she's still performing Sebastian in this moment. But the fact that like that whole scene plays out at no point during the rest of this game, the other rest, like second half of this game, does she stop? She got a lot of fucking hair. No.
Yeah. She and her friends are back. There.
Yeah. Yes.
The Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders are there.
The pep band is there. Yeah.
There have to be extra clean hair ties.
Yes.
Somebody could do a quick top half Frenchie on her and I would take that. But I would love it if the soccer coach stopped and just braided her hair real quick.
Yes. Also great. He was delightful.
Vinnie Jones, yes. Vinnie Jones. I had that same note at the end. I said, I can't believe she's gonna play soccer with her hair down. Like I not being a person who's ever had hair quite long enough to use. Well, I know, but never long enough. Like, but even I could, you know, sort of recognize that. That was like, that's not a, like, just tactically, that's not a good
thing.
Idea.
It's just not a thing. Sure. While we are talking about the ending, I already said this, but I just need to reiterate that this movie should have ended with Viola and Olivia together. I reject our final pairings. They're wrong. Viola and Olivia forever, the end.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a strong end. Okay.
My rewrite of this movie.
I certainly agree that Olivia has some feelings and identity to explore. I don't want to assume where she'll land.
Well, but if you were making the movie, you would get to choose.
Exactly. That's the thing.
I see.
In the version
where
I rewrite this ending.
Right, right.
Where I get to decide. Gotcha. That's where they land.
I like that. And in my version of this ending, she does not confess before she wins the fucking game.
Oh, like, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, come on now.
Like, it incentivizes them ganging up on her. Like, the fact that she confesses before the game is over is just very silly to me.
Imagine she wins the game and then like reveals herself. Right. And I don't mean reveal. I mean, she takes off her wig and shows that she's Viola and then goes to find Olivia. And then the movie ends. Like, have that be the sort of kick in the teeth to those who have thought that she couldn't do it to sort of demonstrate that, oh, my God, that was you. And then especially in our rewrite where Channing Tatum knows or Duke knows. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, then it's not you're not dealing with that whole thing. So it's like he's kind of in on it, too. You know, I think all of these endings I like better.
OK, guys, let's get to it. She's the Man remake. Yeah.
Reboot. Speaking of remakes and reboots, do you all want to play a game?
Yes, we want to play a game.
So I have written down six of the more famous Shakespeare works. There are so many. How do we decide? I put in some of the obvious. I did not put in some of the obvious. So I have six of those. And then I have six settings/time periods.
Ooh.
And so those will be randomized.
Okay.
And you will pick a number for each that will give you your pairing. And then you have to pitch it as why that version, why you're making that version.
Wow. Wow.
Okay.
Wow. Okay. Can we work together sometimes too? Because
we can help each other.
Okay, I think each of us should do one.
Okay.
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 All right.
So I'll give you the list.
Okay.
Okay. So we've got Romeo and Juliet.
Hmm.
We got The Tempest.
Oh dear.
We've got Othello.
Uh huh.
We got Midsummer Night's Dream.
Okay. Okay.
Richard III.
Ah, that's mine. Yeah. Okay.
And Comedy of Errors.
Oh boy.
So how about this?
Oh boy.
We each get to pick our play. But then you get a randomized setting.
Okay. Let's try that.
Sure.
Okay. You want to know the settings ahead of time or not?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
So Tobin seemed to have a strong feeling. So Tobin, what play do you pick?
I'll do, unless either of you want it, I will take Richard III.
I do not want it. I'm familiar with it only because of you, my friend.
Okay. Nicole, am I taking that off from under you?
No, go for it. This game makes me feel super illiterate and uncultured, so I'm going to pick Romeo and Juliet because...
Oh, good.
Just because it's the only one that I feel like I could possibly speak to.
See, and I feel very trite picking Midsummer Night's Dream because it also has had a lot of adaptations, but I love it.
Yeah, you know that better than I do then, because I would not have. Yeah, I think we've all maybe hit on our strong suit. Let's not. Okay.
Good. So, Ted, would you like to go first? Because you picked
yours.
So pick a number between 1 and 6.
3.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So pitch to us, please, a Richard III.
Oh, dear. Uh-huh.
In the style of a superhero franchise.
Oh, a superhero Richard III?
Taking place in current or near future.
Ooh. Oh, wow, this is so hard.
It was like Marvel's Richard III.
Nicole, our games have never been this hard. No, this is great. You're so good at these games. I love this. And I can always edit because I might need some time to think here.
Edit out the long pause.
Yeah, exactly. All my, so we're doing a Marvel Richard III. Okay. Yes. Okay. I think I have something. Okay.
Ooh.
So my pitch for a superhero Marvel style Richard III is that you start with the offspring of a superhero So let's just imagining that, I don't know, who would be a superhero with superpowers, right? So we'll say Thor and Natalie Portman have a child, and that child is does not. Oh, this is hard, right? Because this gets into the whole thing of his, oh God, it was Hunchback and stuff, yeah, and Richard the Third.
Physical.
Yeah. Okay. So Hemsworth and Natalie Portman have a child, and that child is not, does not have all of Thor. He can't lift Thor's hammer. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, and his father's flying all around doing all this stuff, and he's left in this shadow, right? And everyone knows that his father's, so he has to, and he feels a great need to sort of take over Asgard or wherever it is that Thor is from.
Right?
So he ends up sort of teaming up with Loki to but then eventually killing Loki, you know, like he decimates the Asgardians, but doing it in this very, not through his strength, but through his political machinations and his deviousness and his getting them to sort of kill each other and stuff, and ends up sort of sitting on the throne of Asgard until all the Guardians of the Galaxy people come through at the end and chase him down and wipe him out. So that's my tragedy, which is the third Marvel movie.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm here for it.
Worked.
I'll go see that movie.
You may be the only one. Oh boy, that was hard on the spot. Right. Okay. All right. Whew, I'm glad I'm finished.
No, I'm not glad, because that means
I feel like you've got two really good numbers here. So as long as you pick one of the good numbers,
okay, one of the good
great.
Numbers.
For Romeo and Juliet.
If she doesn't pick a good number, you should let her pick again.
What number did you pick?
4.
Oh, that's one of them. Okay. Are you ready? This is
okay.
Middle school in our social media climate.
Oh, wow.
Oh, dear.
That's kind of a good match.
Yeah.
The message is not getting back and forth accurately.
It's there.
Uh-huh. And the timing.
Uh-huh. Okay. I feel you. It's good. There's something there.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not that thing is in my brain. So I feel like I have to reverse this, go backwards a year in time, pre the death of Vine. And our Romeo is a Vine star, and our Juliet is a Snapchat star. They're internet famous.
Ooh, yes. Yes. That's and so good.
And that's the sort of the heart of the, that's the war.
Yeah.
That's the heart of that.
Yeah.
And at the end, they both grow up and get on Instagram stories or something. I'm not sure. I don't know how to say.
Yeah. So maybe their accounts. Their accounts.
Oh,
die.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Ooh, you know what I mean? Yeah, right.
Yes.
That's good.
Okay.
I like it.
I totally.
That was a collaborative effort, but thank you.
No, I love that. That's great. That's very good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay, Aslan, you're.
Well, I'm looking at it, so I don't know if I can pick a number, but I can just pick one, or someone can pick
you
a number.
Do number five. Yeah.
That is the best. Okay. So, Midsummer Night's Dream. At an inner city ER night shift.
Wow.
In the time period of my choice.
All right.
I don't know time period, but I feel like this is a great fit because of the hallucinogenic elements of Midsummer Night's Dream. Like ER, night shift, either people on the drugs that they came in on or passing them around or the drugs they're hooked up to as a result of their injuries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole, is it a dream? Is it not a dream? Also, mistaken identity, again, could be as a result of not being right in your mind, but also alternatively of a lovable person who's often in the ER, who knows their way in and out and can grab a white coat and can, you know, perform the different roles within that environment as the trickster character for that.
That's good. Well, you also have medical professionals who've been up for 24, hours.
Yes. Oh my god.
That sort of
yes.
dreamy quality of. I like that. That's cool.
Yes.
That's cool. That's a good
yes.
one.
Getting it in the on-call room.
And you have like I forget what they're called, but the two like the two main. The god and goddess, the Oberon and whoever, could be like over mm-hmm. the loudspeakers and stuff, you know, like they're just sort of disembodied voices. And
yes.
Yeah, cool. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Doctor. That's good.
Yeah. Send that's that to good. Shonda Rhimes. I'd watch that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's probably going to be an episode yeah. one of these days. Yeah.
Done so many. Or has been. Yeah.
Extraordinary yeah. things.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the game. That was a hard game, but that was good. That was fun.
Hard but good.
Harsh but fair.
That's my middle name. Harsh but fair.
So rather than rate our movies on the contenders, we at the end here we have to decide whether we think this movie is progressive or regressive. Is it a step forward or a step back for fearless women in front of and behind the camera? And so I think let's start with Nicole. Nicole, is this movie progressive ultimately or regressive?
I think this is hard to answer because I recognize that some of my gut reactions to it are like simply not fair because this movie was made in 2006 mm-hmm. and we're talking about it in 2018.
Right.
And so like if I acknowledge that, I feel like I'm going to give it a baby step forward. Mm. I'm going to say it's a baby step forward based solely on the fact that it is a continued commentary on the way in which gender is performed. And I would not have given it that baby step forward before we had this conversation. But some of the things that Aislinn was saying about sort of like getting people to the first step, I feel like mm-hmm. this functions as that. It functions usefully as that. So begrudgingly will say
nice. Aislinn?
What stands out to me in the question itself is the phrase fearless women. And I think that, Amanda Bynes being the selling point, the human most in front on the poster, this mm-hmm. is, she is the talent for this. I do find her fearless in this role. And so for that part, I have no reservation saying progressive. I agree with Nicole. It depends on, there's caveats mm-hmm. involved, but it does ultimately, I think it does ask some good questions. Nothing is, well, few things are going to go as far in right. all the directions right. mm-hmm. that we all want them to, right? And would we want to watch that show?
Well,
maybe.
That catches every, I don't know, that catches sort of every nuance of, I don't know, because then we wouldn't be able to talk about it.
I'm not sure it's possible necessarily.
Yes, yes.
So for the world that the movie posits, it's not as easy to say progressive, but I do think it creates a landscape from which there are jumping off points to have larger discussions. Not everyone analyzes it to mm-hmm. the degree we do, but I will give it a progressive. And I didn't know either when I came into this where I was going to land, but for the binds of it all, I go progressive.
You guys make really persuasive cases. I really needed this conversation to work through how to feel about this movie. And I think that I'm tempted to say no, because I think that for a lot of people watching this movie, maybe they might not watch it as deeply as we have and sort of recognize the reservations. But I think you both persuaded me. I think that this, both for Amanda Bynes and for, as you say, sort of exposing some level of subversion into a genre of movie that maybe doesn't get enough of it, I think that this is a little tiny step forward on balance, all things considered. And I think that that has a lot to do with, as you've said, this very fearless performance at its center. And so, yeah, I will label this a hesitantly progressive. Aislinn, what are we going to cover next?
Well, thanks for asking, Tobin. Next up, we have Ava DuVernay's A Wrinkle in Time coming in 2 weeks on March 20th. It will be the first scheduled time that we talk about something in theaters.
So get out there and watch A Wrinkle in Time as it comes out. Support this movie written, directed by, and starring fearless women. And so that you can and then catch up with us on the 20th when our episode drops. And I think that'll be a good one.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear it.
Yeah. Hey, Nicole, thanks so much for doing this
for doing the show
with us. This has been so much fun. I hope you'll come back and do another one.
Yeah, this was a blast. Thank you so much for having me.
Where can people find you and where should they be looking for the good work that you do?
I am all over social media at Sweeney Says, Sweeney like Todd. And you can also find me wherever you're listening to this podcast on Snark Squad Pod.
Yes, I highly, highly recommend people go check out Snark Squad Pod. It's a consistently fantastic series of conversations. You can find me on Twitter at Tobin Addington. And also, no, wait, that's it. Yeah, I don't know where I was going. Sorry, that's me. You can find me on Twitter at Tobin Addington, all one word.
Reluctantly, you can find me on Twitter at SassyNerdMT. And you can find us at facebook.com/thecontenderspod or on Twitter at contenders_pod. Get in touch. Tell us what movies you'd like to see us do in the future. That's always a fun game. Here at The Contenders, we are proud members of the Cage Club Network for all those shows, including Too Fast, Too Forever.
Aislinn's favorite.
My favorite. Piano Club and Cinemakers that Towen mentioned and all the rest. Go to cageclub.me or facebook.com/cageclub and find them at Cage Club Pod on Twitter.
Go find all the shows at the Cage Club Podcast Network on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review our show and Snark Squad Pod and Real Bad Pod and all these great shows that are out there. The reviews really help us spread the word, and if you leave us a comment, then we might read it on an upcoming show. How's that for incentive? I am Tobin Addington.
And I'm Aislinn Addington.
And I'm Nicole Sweeney.
And we'll see you next time on The Contenders.
I'll count down a 3, 2, 1, clap, and we'll clap on clap. Everybody clap. And that'll be at least a way to do that, okay?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Sorry.
Now, that sounded to me like three very different claps.
I thought you were, sorry, my dog just walked in. Hey, I thought that you were telling me to start, and I know that contradicts what you just said, so I'm ready for the clap this time. I'm so sorry. Right. I'm really not an idiot, I promise.